This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way.
I'm Molly.
And I'm Matthew.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
And today we're talking about Negronis.
Yay! I also want to point out this episode is airing, if you're listening to it on Air Day. Air Day? Is that a thing?
Yeah, it's Air Day. Like, National Air Day, October 1st.
Well, after all the wildfire smoke we've been having on the West Coast, I really look forward to National Air Day.
Yeah, it's not National Clean Air Day necessarily. It's just it's just a day to think about air and, like, how we fucked it up.
Okay. Well, anyway, if you are listening to this on the day the show comes out, that's October 1st, guess what? You, like us, missed Negroni Week.
Well, I mean, we don't know that our listeners missed it. Possibly all of our listeners were drinking a Negroni a day from September 14th through 20th.
God, that's right. It's true. I guess not everybody's doing the exact same thing we're doing all the time.
Well, I don't know. Maybe our listeners, maybe they follow us on social media. We're influencers, and we've influenced them to be just like us. What do you think are, like, the top three things that we do that our listeners do along with us?
I posted some pictures of Negronis, like, over the years. Maybe our listeners really are drinking Negronis.
Like Negronis over the years, like the movie Boyhood, where you can, like, see the Negroni getting older.
Yeah.
I think listeners really appreciate the way I, like, change positions on the couch once in a while so I don't get a cramp. And they're probably doing that along with me. It's my own little exercise regime.
Speaking of, like, you know, what we're doing, and, like, our listeners maybe keeping an eye on it. I remember way back in the early days of blogging when the blog Chocolate and Zucchini was like the biggest food blog out there, run by the lovely and extremely, God, prolific Clotilde Dussoulier. Anyway, I remember she created a forum on her site, right? Like a little auxiliary place where her readers could go and chat amongst themselves. This seemed really revolutionary at the time. And I remember Brandon and I going over and looking at the forum one day, and there was a whole thread that was just like, what do you think Clotilde is doing right now?
Oh, yeah. But if you live in France, just everything you do is automatically interesting, right?
I guess that's true. But Brandon and I were like, oh my God. So wait, do people just come to this forum to talk about what they think Clotilde is doing right now? The internet is so weird.
Oh, if there was, like, a thread, we don't have a forum because who would participate? We have a Facebook page. But, like, if there's a thread about, like, what do you think Matthew and Molly are doing right now? It would be so boring.
Hey, I have a guess.
Yeah.
I think I'm sitting in my closet recording this podcast, and I think you're sitting in your bedroom.
Yep, that's correct. And, like, I've also been spending a lot of time in my storage room practicing singing because it's the only place I can go that doesn't enrage the rest of the family. And so basically I've been, like, screaming in my closet for an hour a day, which is very therapeutic. I highly recommend it.
Oh, okay, great. Hot tips, hot mental health tips.
It's really true. Matthew. Like spending even, like, half an hour a day sometimes just like singing at high volume, well or not well, just makes me feel so much better.
I love when you send me voice recordings of yourself.
I should have something new in the next couple of days.
Okay, great. Because I seriously
and
love it.
Listeners, you can't hear any.
Okay. All right. Well, back to the show. All right. So today we're talking about Negronis.
That's a cocktail, right?
It is a cocktail.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Again, this is an episode I was a little nervous about because I think I've now had a Negroni twice in my life. But the most recent time was Saturday night.
Oh, well, cool. Okay. Well, hold on. Before we come up to the present, Matthew, let's go down memory lane. What's on your Negroni memory lane?
Oh, and we were going to let people know that transcripts of the show are now available at spilledmilkpodcast.com/transcripts.
So that's right.
Read
that's
all about important. Us. Okay, my Negroni memory lane, I think I probably first heard about it from you, because I know this is one of your favorite cocktails, and you've been drinking them for a while. I think we did a classic cocktails episode. We recorded it at producer Abby's house about 6 years ago.
Has it been that long?
Yeah, and I believe you made a Negroni, and that was definitely the first time I had one, and possibly also the first time I heard of it. So that's my memory lane.
Oh, cool,
man.
We've
been doing the show long enough that probably most of my memory lane coincides with the time we've been doing the show.
That makes sense. I mean, we've been doing the show for basically like a quarter of our lifetimes.
Whoa, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so yeah, I first heard of the Negroni from my mother, Toni Weisenberg.
Oh, Toni Negroni, they called her.
I should have called her up and asked her where she first had it.
I thought you were going to say I should have called her Toni Negroni. When I was growing up.
No.
What a missed opportunity. If you had a time machine and could just use it one time, you'd use it to go back
to
like 27 years and call your mom Toni Negroni and then come back to the present.
You know, here's the good news, though. I could start doing it now.
Oh, is true. It's never too late.
I am having dinner with my mother tonight.
Okay.
So I could call her Toni Negroni.
We're recording another episode tomorrow. I want you to let me know tomorrow how that went.
Okay.
And let everyone know.
Okay. So my mom, at a certain point, I don't know what kind of high life she was living, but at a certain point, Toni Weisenberg decided that she was going to have a winter drink and a summer drink. Like when she would go out to a restaurant, there was like a cocktail that she was going to order in the winter and a cocktail she was going to order in the summer.
That is so smart, because as we discussed on the cocktail classic cocktail episode, and I feel like I've gotten a little better at this, but not much better. Like I never know what cocktail to order if there isn't a menu. And so having like and cocktails are seasonal. So like I don't want to order mojito in December. I mean, I guess that's a good point.
But that's a good point.
But having a seasonal cocktail, I think, is so smart.
Wow. I thought you were going to say it's so ridiculous.
No, not at all.
Okay.
I think it's brilliant.
Well, I think I'm a real classic cocktails person. And I don't know. To me, they're seasonless. I don't really get it.
Though, well, I think some of them are seasonal.
Well, sure. I mean, a mojito or something like that, or even a margarita feels like summer to me. Okay. But what I was going to say is, I think if I had to guess, that she made the Negroni her winter drink because it was like dark in color. Not that it's made with any brown liquors, but I think people sometimes think of brown liquor as what you drink when it's cold outside,
sure.
Right? So the Negroni being this kind of like rusty red color, and being like bitter and very, very strong. I mean, there's nothing about this drink that tiptoes around.
That's
so
true.
The thing is I can't remember what her summer cocktail was, but I think that it was clear. I think it was maybe a gin and tonic or something more light colored.
Okay, so tonight, when you have dinner with your mom, first of all, say, hey, Toni Negroni, I have a question for you. Just like, just slide it in there casually see what happens.
Okay.
And then ask her what her summer cocktail was.
Okay, I will. Great. I love the way you've just given me this script as though I wouldn't have thought of it myself.
I'm someone who has trouble sometimes coming up with conversation topics, so you're welcome.
Do you ever, like, oh my gosh, I don't know if you remember this because it was so long ago, but back when you used to go on first dates, would you think of conversation topics ahead of time?
Oh yes, 100%.
Oh, me too. Me too. I wonder if this is just like something that only people who have anxiety or
when,
deal with
just
anxiety
when you
do.
Said first date, like I started feeling anxious.
Okay. Anyway.
Just like, yeah, no, just that that feeling of like, I have to make a good first impression here and I have no idea how to do that. And usually I think I make a bad first impression.
This for me carries over to meeting new people in general.
Oh yeah, me too.
I mean, I've gotten way better at it. Like, I don't come up with a list of questions anymore. And I am a good enough conversationalist that I can just meet someone and enjoy myself. But in general, like, I am never going to be one of those people who you will ever hear say, I love meeting new people.
I mean, I do actually like meeting new people.
Really?
I mean, love is strong. Yes, we've talked about this before, that I'm always the person who's trying to get us to like meet up with listeners and stuff.
Oh, that's true. And I'm always like, Matthew, why are you doing that? I don't like meeting new people. Or it's not that I don't like it. It's like, it's a little hard for me.
Oh, it's hard for me too. I like meeting new people in a context where like, we know that like, we can fall back on talking about like the thing that I do, which I know is kind of terrible, but like,
well,
you know,
I think that's human nature.
Yeah.
Humans are terrible.
Right. Like, I know if I'm in a context where it's not like a spilled milk event and like I understand it would be inappropriate to say, let's just talk about all the things I'm into, then I kind of don't know what to do.
Yeah. I've had a number of really nice meetups with Spilled Milk listeners, and actually like people who I met professionally because they had listened to this podcast or read my work are often like some of my closest friends. So I don't know what my problem is.
Yeah. No one knows.
Great. Okay. Okay. Anyway, all right. So my memory lane involves Toni Negroni and her winter drink. So when I first started learning more about Negronis and enjoying them myself, I remember seeing them in the context of like summer drinks in Italy. Like, I think a lot of people think of the Negroni as a hot weather drink in Italy.
Well, I think of Campari as being kind of summery just because of the color, I think.
That's so interesting. I mean, I think that Toni Negroni has so thoroughly gotten this idea in my head that these like colors are wintry colors.
Oh, Toni Negroni's running sort of some sort of propaganda mill.
Even though like, oh God, I can't think of anything that I enjoy more than sitting outside in the evening, like on vacation and drinking a Campari and soda or something. And that would be done in warm weather.
Yeah. But I mean, Italy's kind of like a lot of it's kind of warm year round, especially southern Italy, right?
That's true. Yeah. Okay.
I don't know what point I'm trying to make.
Well, anyway, I think any of our listeners who are really familiar with Italian aperitivo culture will probably agree with me that the Negroni is not really a winter drink.
Okay.
Anyway, but for me, it's my all-weather drink.
Okay. How long has that been the case?
Oh my gosh, this has been the case for years. So at first, when Toni Negroni first got into her habit of ordering Negronis,
right,
I thought they were disgusting. I thought they looked and sounded disgusting.
Wait, did she have the nickname like for years before she ever ordered her first Negroni? That would be kind of odd.
Anyway, so I don't even remember exactly when it was. I think it's been in the last 10 years that I have come to really love Negronis. And my mother, I think, was an early adopter. She loved them far before that.
Okay, that makes sense. I'm trying to think of other things that rhyme with cocktails or names of liquors so I can give myself a nickname. And I haven't come up with anything yet, but I'll keep you posted.
How about I tell everyone what a Negroni is for those listeners who have been living under a rock?
I mean, I got to say, like, even though, again, we covered it in an episode 6 years ago, I had totally forgotten what was in it until I looked it up.
Well, so the Negroni is, it comes from Italy. It's a popular Italian aperitivo. So the Italian version of an aperitif, which is a pre-meal drink. The idea being that like Campari or bitter liquors open the stomach.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So a Negroni is made of equal parts gin, red or sweet vermouth, and Campari. So traditionally equal parts, and then garnished either with like an orange wheel or a half wheel or an orange peel.
Is this related in some way to a martini since it has gin and vermouth, or are the proportions so different that it's not even a relative?
You are assuming that I drink martinis and make them, which I don't.
No, I'm just assuming that you're a cocktail historian.
I'm David Wondrich.
Yes. How about Jeannie Martini?
Anyway, so no, Matthew, my understanding is that I don't think the Negroni and the Martini are related. Okay. For one thing, the Martini has much less vermouth
relative to
gin. Anyway, people like to mess with the proportions, but purists get pretty cranky if you call something a Negroni and it's not equal parts gin, vermouth, and Campari.
Oh, that's so easy, though, because like usually even when I make a very simple cocktail, I have to look up the recipe to make sure I'm getting the proportions right. But if it was 1:1:1, I could remember that.
Well, and this is part of why I think this is like my, like when I make a cocktail, which I do maybe one night a week, I try to always have around the stuff for Negronis, and 9 times out of 10 I make a Negroni because I never have to look it up. The gin lives in my freezer and the Campari and vermouth are just there and I know exactly what to do. So
yeah, I feel that way about an old fashioned, which is one of my favorites, which is like whiskey and like a little tiny bit of other stuff.
Mm-hmm. So a Negroni is stirred, not shaken. Really, never shaken. Wikipedia says that you build it over ice in an old-fashioned or rocks glass. But in lots of places, especially these days, the bartender will ask if you want it on the rocks or up.
Do you have like an overall feeling of whether you're like a rocks or up person?
I always thought that I was a rocks person, also because I hate the look of a lot of martini glasses. Like, mm-hmm. I think they look dumb, but
what about the ones where the stem of the glass is like all squiggly, though?
I was going to say that is my least favorite type of martini glass.
And you can serve it with a bendy straw.
So when I'm out in the world, I think that I would order a Negroni on the rocks. But when I'm at home, so I have two of these little, very, very thin crystal, like etched, I think they're sherry glasses. Mm-hmm. And I think that either Brandon bought them at a thrift store somewhere or my dad maybe bought them a long time ago. Anyway, you know, they look like something that your grandmother would have. And it's got a little stem, but it's much smaller than a martini glass and shorter. So I love making myself Negronis at home with these. But I do find that when I drink anything up, I tend to get annoyed that it immediately starts warming up.
Of course.
And doesn't stay ice cold. But then if your Negroni's on the rocks, then you get like more ice melt into it than I necessarily want.
We should get some of those, what are those things? Whiskey stones, like that keep your drink cold, but without diluting it.
Yeah.
It's like a Father's Day gift type of thing.
That sounds great. I'll get you a tie clip and you get me that.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I mean, it is your birthday today as we're recording.
It is.
And
my birthday is not.
I did not get you whiskey stones.
My birthday is not October 1st. Though
no.
I feel like we should tell the listeners. I am a solid Virgo, September 14th.
Why? But if people wanted to get you a late birthday present, you wouldn't say no, right?
I would not say no.
Something from Brookstone or the Hammock or Schlemmer catalog.
Maybe people might want to get me those whiskey chunks or whatever.
They're called whiskey chunks.
Oh my God, Matthew. Did I tell you about baking kunks?
What did you just say?
Have I not told you about this?
No.
Oh my God, this is the best thing to happen in my household in like the last month.
I like it already, I think.
So one day, June was not with us. Ash and I think it was like a Sunday afternoon. Ash was at home, but Ash was about to leave to go to the grocery store. And I was typing a grocery list into a text for them so they could look it up in the grocery store. And I typed like Scharfenberger baking chunks, but it came out as baking kunks. C-U-N-K-S. And Ash and I laughed so hard about it.
That's very funny.
That then Ash was like, wouldn't it be funny if we called a grocery store and asked if they carry baking kunks?
Did
we
had a good prank call a grocery store?
We had a good laugh about this. And then Ash actually got on the phone and called a grocery store. I'm not going to say which one. And asked for baking kunks. And Ash like kept a straight face so well. Anyway, I have to tell you, we've now told June about it.
Oh, great.
And she's prank called a grocery store asking for baking kunks. She was really good at it. Like, totally kept a straight face. Although, she can spell aloud really fast. So, inevitably, the call goes like this. Okay.
I don't know how I feel about this. I feel like grocery stores are, like, they're going through enough.
I know.
Without having to deal with you and your bullshit.
I know. I'm really sorry. I think this makes me a terrible person. But it gave us so much joy. Anyway, so the
call
usually goes like this.
Like, it's not like this is malicious and you know the person at the store like hung up and said, everyone gather around, you gotta hear the shit that just happened.
So the best part is that, so inevitably the call goes like this. Hi, I'm looking to see if you have a particular product. And then the person's like, okay. And you say, I'm looking for baking kunks. And there's always like a silence on the other end for a little while. And then they go, I'm sorry, baking what? And you go, baking kunks. C-U-N-K-S. And they always go, baking chunks? And you go, nope. C-U-N-K-S. But the best part is that when June was doing it, she can spell aloud really fast.
Okay.
But she spelled it wrong.
Oh, no.
She goes, B-A-K-I-N-G-C-U-N-C-S.
That's close enough to a thing that doesn't exist.
Anyway, it goes on and on and on. We had one grocery store refer us to another grocery store.
Oh, okay.
I'll send you.
Yeah,
Matthew.
Just like I need you to stop bothering me about this. Go bother Albertsons.
Anyway, Matthew, we made voice recordings of these.
You're the new jerky boys.
We're terrible. But I have to say that in the midst of a horrible year, the discovery of baking kunks is one of the best things that happened to our household, and no regrets. I'm sorry, listeners, if you hate me after this, but yep, we prank called grocery stores a couple weekends in a row.
I think this is going to be a pretty polarizing event in the history of spilled milk, and I am curious to hear what people think.
I don't like putting myself out there this way. But anyway, I know that it wasn't the best decision we've ever made, but it was good for our mental health.
Yeah, I understand. That seems fair. Like, I just go in the closet and scream. This episode is brought to you by MasterClass.
Matthew, take a minute and picture that thing that you've always wanted to learn.
All right, I'm picturing the thing.
Okay.
And you know, what if I get lost in the wilderness?
Well, okay, this is the thing?
This is the thing.
Oh, okay. Well, so picture learning it from someone who's literally the best at getting lost in the wilderness.
No, no, no.
In the world.
You don't understand, Molly. I want to get found in the wilderness.
Oh, okay.
So, and for that, I turn to Jesse Krebs, who is an internationally recognized expert on wilderness survival. She has a class on MasterClass, and she teaches like the five basic needs. And if you think number one is water, you're wrong. She teaches you how to use a knife, how to use rope, one of your most important tools in the wilderness. I don't think I'm going to get stuck in the wilderness, but if I do, I'm going to be really happy that I took this class on MasterClass.
Yeah, well, MasterClass is where you should go if you don't just want to think about learning something, but you actually want to do it with one-on-one classes with the world's best.
Yeah, if you want to learn singing from Christina Aguilera, if you want to learn shooting threes from Steph Curry, there's only one place in the world to do those things, unless you happen to know those people, which you don't.
Yeah, you don't. And every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk.
And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
That's 15% off right now at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Did you know that the bold, smooth taste of Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed in your Keurig coffee maker and enjoyed at home? Dunkin's cold K-Cup pods were crafted to be brewed hot and enjoyed cold. And of course, they're packed with the Dunkin' flavor you crave. Brew over ice and sip in seconds. Because the home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Can I keep talking about Negronis now?
Yes, please.
Okay, so Negronis are the most successful drink to have ever come out of Italy, according to the New York Times.
I didn't realize how popular they've become. You and Tony Negroni were really ahead of the curve on this.
Let's give the credit to whom it's due, and that's Tony Negroni.
Right.
Anyway, according to the New York Times, in 2018, the Negroni was the second most called-for cocktail worldwide, surpassed only by the old-fashioned.
called for is a funny way of putting that. I mean, I know that's probably like a bartending industry term.
What do you think is the most uncalled for cocktail worldwide?
Oh, like one of those like martinis with a slider on top, like some, or like a Bloody Mary with a whole roast chicken.
Okay,
that's uncalled for.
All right, so let's talk about the history of the Negroni. So I started doing this research on Wikipedia, as usual, and then I thought, you know what, this history, even Wikipedia says this history is disputed. So I looked more widely, like at the New York Times, the website Punch, the great, like, drinks website Punch. I looked up David Wondrich stuff, and, you know, here's the thing. The history I'm about to share is disputed, but nobody seems to share what, like, the competing history is.
Okay.
So anyway, okay, it seems that the Negroni is a descendant of the Americano, not to be confused with coffee Americano.
I was just going to ask.
So an Americano in Italy is another aperitivo, and it is made from equal parts sweet vermouth and Campari, and then a splash of soda water.
Okay. And if you try to order, like, the coffee drink Americano in Italy, they just say, we're not going to do that.
That's correct. Anyway, but yeah, I think of an Americano as sort of a lighter version of a Negroni, right? Well, it turns out that they are actually related, that the Negroni came out of the idea of the Americano. So the most widely reported account of how this drink came to be is that in Florence in 1919, at some place called Cafe Cassoni, there was this count.
I didn't expect a count to enter the story at this point.
Well, so Count Negroni. I find this very confusing. Anyway, there was a count whose last name was Negroni, and he was at the Cafe Cassoni in 1919, and he asked the bartender.
He was sitting at the piano in the cafe playing a harmonic minor scale and saying that they call him the count because he loves to count things.
Oh, my God. Don't make me think of the skit I've already mentioned many times.
I know, yeah.
Okay, anyway, so Count Negroni asked the bartender there, a man named Fosco Scarselli, to make his
Fosco.
Right? Isn't that great?
Yeah.
This episode is really inspiring. Count Negroni asked the bartender to make his Americano stronger by using gin instead of soda water. And Scarselli also swapped the usual Americano garnish, which would be lemon, for an orange garnish.
Okay.
Anyway, people love to argue about this stuff. Some say that Negroni actually invented it in Senegal in the mid-1850s. There's a typo on the agenda here. Not 1950s, 1850s.
Oh, wow.
Other people say it was somebody else's invention entirely. Our man David Wondrich has done some research into Count Negroni, and apparently this will shock everyone. His status as an actual count is dubious.
David Wondrich's status as an actual count?
No, David Wondrich count, is for sure a count.
Yeah, Count Wondrich. I feel like of all the titles, like of nobility that you could have, count is way up there, right? Like I feel like there's a whole kind of like personality and style that goes along with count. That whereas if you're just like a lord or like a duke or something.
Yeah, even being a duke seems sort of like the younger, less dignified title compared to count.
Yeah, and I think like count is pretty up there in terms of rank.
Huh. I don't know. But you'll see, Matthew, on the second page of the agenda, I cut and pasted a picture of Count Negroni.
Let's just turn this in. Whoa.
General Pascal Olivier de Negroni, 1829 to 19th. Wait a minute.
Why
1913? Wait a minute.
Yes?
This guy can't. Hold on. I think there were multiple count. Okay. Here's part of what
no.
I think.
He died in 1913, and then he went into a bar in 1919 and invented a new drink.
Okay. This is all coming together for me. I think that part of the dispute is that there were, like, historically multiple Count Negronis or something.
Well,
and this one was in Senegal in the 1850s, and people say that he ordered it there. But then there was some other Count Negroni who was alive in 1919 who ordered it in Florence.
It's probably like a hereditary title.
Yes.
Also, why was his name French and Italian?
Well, I think that this was probably, this picture in Wikipedia was probably out of some sort of French publication.
Okay.
Which is why it's in French.
All right.
Do you think that Tony Negroni is a title that can be inherited?
I mean, I think you would have to talk to Tony Negroni about that, which is convenient since you're having dinner with her tonight.
Yes. Okay. Anyway, so, you know, Negronis, there are so many variations on them now.
What about so Mari Campari?
That's pretty nice.
Pretty good, right?
But that's pretty good. What about...
What's the other ingredient? I already forgot.
Vermouth.
Oh, yeah. I don't think there's a name that sounds like that. Okay. Huh. I'll keep thinking about it.
So anyway, yeah. So most people say that the Negroni must be equal parts of these three ingredients.
Okay,
but
wait.
A lot of people...
Sorry, I have to interrupt. I just thought of what my new name is going to be. Jack Sazerac. Okay.
Oh, God.
Pretty
that
good,
is so
right?
Manly. That is like rippling with testosterone.
Yeah, I don't know what goes into a Sazerac, but I know it's a cocktail. It's probably good. I'm going to be Jack Sazerac from now on.
I'm pretty sure it has some absinthe.
Yes. So it'll make, so like I can use that as an excuse for the bad things that I do after drinking.
Doesn't it? Here, look it up.
Sazerac, rye whiskey and cognac, absinthe, sugar cube, Peychaud's bitters.
Oh, that's...
rye whiskey.
Doesn't
or
that sound
cognac?
Great?
That doesn't seem like they would be substitutes for each other, but okay. That sounds good, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds great. I am so excited about your new persona, yep, Jack Sazerac.
Jack Sazerac. International bad boy.
What should I be? We've got Tony Negroni, Jack Sazerac.
We'll figure it out by the end of the episode.
Okay. So, a lot of bartenders recommend upping the amount of gin in your Negroni, with the idea being that it sort of makes it a little bit lighter tasting. Because, you know, Campari, even when you pour it out of the bottle, like, it's got a real viscosity to it. It's very bitter and also very sweet.
I've never poured Campari out of a bottle, but I believe you.
Yeah, it is not entirely unlike cough syrup. It's not that thick.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. It's not that thick. But it has that kind of intensity of flavor and intensity of like sweetness and bitterness.
There's probably a Negroni variation made with Robitussin instead of Campari.
Anyway, some bartenders even use up to 3 parts gin, which to me seems like a whole other thing.
So like 3 parts gin, 1 part Campari, 1 part the other thing, vermouth?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, there are many, many, many Negroni variations, and I think we should run through a few of them because I think you'll be familiar with some of them. So, of course, there's the Americano, which you could say that the Negroni is a variation on the Americano
okay.
and vice versa. So that, again, is equal parts Campari and sweet vermouth with a splash of soda. Then, Matthew, have you had this, a Boulevardier?
I think I have had that.
Okay. So this is made with whiskey instead of gin.
I don't think I knew it was related.
Mm-hmm. Then, Matthew, as you know, I love an old pal.
Did we have that on the classic cocktail episode? I feel like I've had this with you.
Had an old pal with me when we have been in Tokyo together.
Oh,
and
nice.
And we go to Bar Victoria. I always order an old pal at Bar Victoria because here's the thing. It's made with rye whiskey instead of gin and dry vermouth instead of sweet. So I think I got into ordering it at Bar Victoria because they have so many whiskeys there.
That sounds like intensely dry to me.
Oh my God. It's so good. I love it. In fact, maybe if the Negroni is going to be my summer drink, maybe the old pal is my
winter
drink with the rye and the dry vermouth.
Like, I'm just thinking
of
what rhymes with old pal
so much. Anyway, hold on. I'm going to move on. Then there's the Negroni Spagliato, which basically means the kind of like wrong or mistaken Negroni.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. And you might like this one. This uses sparkling white wine or Prosecco instead of the gin.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah. Then there is, I don't know how I feel about this version. There is a version that uses tequila instead of gin, and that's called the Agavoni or the Tegroni.
These are bad names, but it might be tasty.
Then there's the Dutch Negroni, which uses Geneva instead of gin.
Like, I've heard of Geneva, but I didn't know it was pronounced that way. And how is it different from gin?
Maybe it's Genever.
That's what I was thinking.
Genever.
Like, Geneva is what you call Geneva if you're from Boston?
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't know. I only used to own a bar.
Oh, right.
Yeah, but I, let's be clear, I was never anywhere remotely close to being a bartender. I will not claim to know how exactly it is different from gin, but okay. It is. Different botanicals and something else.
Good answer. Different botanicals.
And then, of course, there's the white Negroni, which is gin, Lillet Blanc, and Suze.
Wait, could your name just be Suze? I don't know what that is.
Suze is, I believe Suze is French. I think it's like a French Amaro. Hang on, let me look it up.
That seems like it could be like your burlesque name, Suze the French Amaro.
Yeah, here we go.
Because Amaro sounds a lot like Amore.
So
I like this.
Suze is, it's a French aperitif, a French, like slightly bitter aperitif made from gentian root. And yeah. Anyway, so that totally makes sense as sort of being the replacement for Campari here.
Yeah.
Different kind of bitter liqueur. Anyway, Matthew, how do you take your Negroni, all two of them?
Okay. So as I mentioned, I had a Negroni Saturday night. I know everyone's very proud of me, and it was on the rocks.
And what did you think?
I liked it. We drank it while watching the Netflix movie Love Guaranteed, a romantic comedy starring Damon Wayans Jr. and she's all that. I forgot her name. Rachel something, I think.
Okay.
Great movie. Highly recommended. Probably shoe-in for Best Picture at this point. Nothing. Everything added up perfectly with this movie. The plot made total sense. And the Negroni was delicious, and I drank the whole thing.
Amazing. So will you talk about how you purchased this Negroni, how you made this happen?
Okay. So I was like, okay, I'm going to like put in a grocery order and get the stuff I need to make a Negroni at home. And then I looked and saw that it was made from three liquors, none of which I had in the house. So like, yeah. Nope, I'm not going to do that. And then producer Abby said, hey, if you go to Due Italian restaurant on Broadway, you can order online and they have pre-bottled cocktails, including a Negroni. And it was made by Straightaway Cocktails in Portland. It comes in this nice little bottle with three servings, and they give you three little pieces of candied orange peel along with that. And so I threw one of those into my cocktail, even though I know it's probably supposed to be just uncandied twist of orange. Mm-hmm. And it was delicious. Like there's no, I like for this kind of cocktail, because it doesn't have any like fresh citrus juice or anything. Like there's no reason that it would suffer by being bottled, and it didn't. It was great.
Yeah. Yeah. Essex has been during the pandemic, they have been, well, Essex and Delancey have been takeout only, and Essex has kind of been a bottle shop, and they've been selling prebatched cocktails in like just little mason jars.
That's what I should have said.
Yes. Yeah, like a Negroni, a Boulevardier, all these things, you know, there's no reason not to pre-batch them. And that's pretty sweet, because then you can just have it like hanging out in your fridge.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was three servings, and so there's still one left.
What a feeling. What a feeling. You are a rich man today, Matthew Amsterburton.
Exactly. We didn't really, we let this breeze by. What did you think of the nickname Suze the French Amaro? I like it.
I don't think it's very catchy.
Okay. Because it doesn't rhyme.
I also think that if you just say Suze, that people just assume my name is Suzanne. Well, because we are talking about me, right? Suze the French Amaro.
You're Suze the French Amaro.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to a burlesque show? I haven't, but it seems like it would be fun.
I have not been to one, no.
Okay, if that ever happens again, let's go.
Okay, cool. You know, the other thing that makes me a little hesitant on this nickname you're trying to give me is that Suze, the French Amaro, mm-hmm. is spelled S-U-Z-E, and that's also how Susie Orman spells her first name.
Oh,
and
yeah,
so
that's true.
And so I feel like people might read it and think it's Susie the French Amaro, which then is just...
But then like they would ask you for financial advice, and you could really build a trust relationship.
Oh, that sounds great. Mm-hmm. Okay. What was that little laugh you did?
I don't know. It felt weird when it was happening. That's just how Jack Sazerac laughs, and you know, you don't make fun of Jack Sazerac's mannerisms.
Okay. All right. Anyway, so wait, Matthew, I'm going to just take this next part of the agenda.
What if you were like Moni Negroni?
Oh, gross.
Joni, like Joni Mitchell. Joni Negroni.
Joni Negroni. I'll be that.
I like that.
That's cool. All right. Can we just get on with this?
Yeah. I mean, you seemed, but like a little bit ago, it seemed like it was really important to you to come up with a nickname as good as Jack Sazerac, which obviously isn't going to happen, but we should at least try.
Okay. All right. So I, as previously noted, I make these at home, and I think that if you're making a Negroni, it's important to just go with a London dry gin. None of these like fancy ass, like cucumber scented gins, or I don't think you need like a Tanqueray 10 or a Hendrick's kind of situation.
Don't know what any of these things are, but I believe you.
These are sort of like, you know, well, both of these have been on the market for a long time now, but they're both sort of like particularly floral or particularly like complex gins.
Okay. So you think Trader Joe's brand gin would be okay for this?
I don't know if I ever recommend buying store brand alcohols.
Okay, that's fair.
Anyway, I would buy something that is just your basic London dry gin, like Bombay, like the original Bombay or the original Tanqueray, maybe. Vermouth, many just recommend, you know, Cinzano Rosso or Martini Rosso. Both of these are really easy to find. Neither is too expensive. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people get all, especially if you go to like bonappetit.com or whatever, they get all up in like...
I don't think anybody goes there anymore.
Carpano Antica and stuff like that.
I have heard of Carpano Antica.
Carpano Antica is delicious. That said, I think if you use Carpano Antica in a Negroni, to me, it doesn't taste like I expect just a straight up Negroni to taste, because Carpano Antica is like really its own thing and tastes very different.
Okay.
From like a sweet vermouth, just plain and simple. Do you like these complex tasting notes that I'm giving?
I do. I was waiting for you to talk about the vermouth that you have been using lately.
Oh, so I've been using, you know, Matthew, I spent a long time Googling this. It's a type of vermouth called Angolieri.
Okay.
And I bought it through Essex because it's what they've been using as a sweet vermouth in cocktails that use clear liquid.
Is it Italian? If it's Italian, I assume it would be Angolieri.
Angolieri. I think you're right, then. Yeah,
so
it is
could
Italian.
Your name be Jerry Angolieri? That's why I was waiting for you to say it.
Oh, great. Yes, that will be my name.
Okay.
Thank you, Matthew. Anyway, yeah, but I mean, basically, the gin should give like kind of the structure of this thing, right? And then the Campari is like this intensely sweet and bitter flavor. And then the vermouth kind of has this sometimes even like kind of smoky wininess.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think this is a perfect drink.
I'm not really sure like what I can say about the flavor of the drink, but like I am definitely like a sweet and fruity cocktail kind of person, but I did enjoy this very much and finished it while watching the best movie, Love Guaranteed.
You tend to be a real lightweight. Did this thing just like hit you so hard?
I mean, I definitely went to bed afterwards, but it was already like 9:20 p.m., so.
Oh, okay. Okay. And I note, we should point out to the listener that you also ate before having your Negroni.
Yeah, which... so it was, what's the opposite? Oh, a digestif. I had it as a digestif, right? Digestivo?
Okay. Is that exactly
what it might be in Italian?
Yes. But it didn't open your stomach and cause you to vomit or anything.
That was another thing I enjoyed about it. What about the nickname Stevo Digestivo?
That seems like it'd be from the 80s.
It does.
You know, well, like, Stevo.
Stevo from Jackass? I thought it was like the 90s, maybe.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Matthew, hold on. If you were going to have a snack with your Negroni, okay?
Like,
imagine that. Okay. Well, what did you have?
I had Cool Ranch Doritos. It was great.
Oh,
it was a perfect pairing.
That? Yeah. Because
there's like Cool Ranch Doritos are like very salty and a tiny bit sweet and very tangy, and that paired really well with the Negroni.
Oh, nice. I would not have thought of that.
Yeah,
oh, I like
delightful.
That. Okay. Well, I imagine that if we were drinking Negronis, like sitting out like on a like a piazza at a cafe or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, I can't wait to get back to our usual piazza habit.
Me too. I imagine that we would be given like a little dish of salted peanuts, you know, kind of like a little flat bottom dish, almost kind of looks like an ashtray, but it's a salted peanut dish. I picture that.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I also totally imagine being served just like plain potato chips, just like a little pile of plain potato chips.
But like, are these bar snacks you would find in Italy?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely. At home, I think either of these is welcome, or maybe like a really delicious meaty olive, maybe like a Castelvetrano olive,
okay,
or something like that. I know that I've mentioned before on the show Jessica Badalana's book Repertoire.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cookbook. Anyway, I love that in sort of the starters section of that book, one of the quote unquote recipes Jessica gives is for a Negroni with potato chips, which,
yeah,
I think is about as perfect a starter as one could have to a meal.
Yeah.
Just wanted to say that.
I wish I could reach my arm out right now to put potato chips on the shopping list, because like a bag of original Lay's is sounding,
yes,
real good right now.
I think that would be perfect with a Negroni.
And
yes,
as I mentioned, I have one more Negroni in the house. Okay.
Oh, I'm so excited for you.
It's a plan. It's a date. A bag of chips, and the last Negroni.
You know, you could go hang out in your closet and scream a lot. And what could be better than that big swirling combination?
Exactly.
You know what is a really big swirling combination? A tornado.
It is. Yeah. did you ever see the movie Twister?
Oh God, no. Are you kidding? I grew up with tornadoes. I would never willingly watch a movie about them.
That's interesting. That's a good point. My upbringing was too sheltered. And so I was able to enjoy all kinds of movies like Twister and Love Guaranteed.
I had so many tornado fears and worries as a child that, I have never sought out tornado related entertainment.
Rachel Lee Cook. That's the star of She's All That and Love Guaranteed.
Okay. Okay.
Sorry. I didn't pause to like hear your childhood fears.
Oh, well, they were just tornadoes.
Yeah.
Period.
I did hear you. I just like breezed on to the next thing.
Oh,
I've been saying
great.
Breeze a lot this episode. A tornado is like the opposite of a breeze.
That's true. Great.
So the movie Love Guaranteed, the premise of the movie is that Damon Wayans is suing a dating website. This takes place in Seattle.
Why are we talking so much about this movie?
Remember how you have spent like 80 minutes on recent episodes talking about Animal Crossing? This is my Animal Crossing.
Oh, no.
So this is our new segment, Love Guaranteed Guaranteed, because it's guaranteed that I'm going to keep bringing up this dumb movie. Premise is that he is suing a dating website because they have a guarantee that if you don't find love within the time you go on 1,000 dates set up through this agency, then within 1,000 dates they guarantee you'll find love, and so he's suing them for $1 million. But then he falls in love with his lawyer, and like, is that going to screw up the case?
Yes,
it is going to screw up the case, because you should not date your lawyer. But this is a romantic comedy, so the rules are out the window.
Okay.
So more on Love Guaranteed next time.
Great. I can't wait. I'm so excited.
Yeah. And movie is set in Seattle, but filmed in Vancouver. And so there are all these like overhead, like establishing shots of Seattle. And then as soon as they zoom in, if you've been to Seattle and Vancouver, you know immediately that it's a Vancouver street scene.
Oh, man, that must be really fun for you.
It was really fun. It made me feel super smug.
This sounds like how I feel when I plant plants in Animal Crossing, mm-hmm, and then they become flowers, and then I get to pick them and sell them to Timmy or Tommy.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This is the Love Guaranteed segment. Animal Crossing has to stay in its own segment.
Oh, okay. All right.
which begins right now.
I have to use the bathroom. Let's finish this
All right.
thing.
We have a podcast to recommend. If you like
we
spilled
sure
milk,
do.
You're also going to enjoy The Four Top, which is a show that we were on once.
We were. So The Four Top, it's won a James Beard Award. It's won an IACP Award.
Yeah. How many awards has Spilled Milk won? None.
Okay. Anyway, with every episode of The Four Top, host Catherine Cole invites on three thought leaders. What are thought leaders?
Well, I mean, us, obviously, since we were on the show.
Right. Okay. Anyway, Catherine Cole invites on three thought leaders for a fast-moving roundtable discussion of hot-button topics in food and beverage.
Yeah, and you can listen to The Four Top right now at thefourtop.org or Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts.
the Foretop. Savor the conversation.
You can find us at SpilledMilkPodcast.com. As I mentioned, we now have transcripts. We're very proud of them. Mm-hmm. Facebook.com/SpilledMilkPodcast, where you can tell us what is your alcohol-themed nickname or non-alcohol-themed nicknames, beverage-themed nickname.
Yeah, yeah.
If you want to be like Prune Juice Newton, if you want to be Prune Juice Newton, you can have that from us to you.
For free.
And Instagram at Spilled Milk Podcast. Our producer is Abby Circatella. And until next time, thank you for listening to Spilled Milk, the show that blows whiskey chunks. Can a callback from too far in the past? Yes, apparently it can.
I'm Holly Weisenberg.
And I'm Matthew Amster Burton.
Anyway, all right, Abby, you can pick it back up now.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.